Hi, welcome to Days in the Wild, Big Game Hunting Podcast, brought to you by Phoenix Shooting Bags. We're going to be doing a series over the next several weeks. I've invited a few guys on that know a thing or two about elk hunting, and I'm going to be throwing them very similar scenarios that you may encounter or that most guys who've done any kind of elk hunting have encountered on their hunts, and see how they would handle it. And even though a lot of the questions will be the same, a lot of scenarios will be the same, it's very interesting to listen to the different approaches from these guys that seem to get it done year in and year out. So I think it's a really neat perspective and a cool way to learn that way when you're presented with those scenarios or those situations out in the field, you'll be able to apply it. I also want to urge you guys to take the time and please go on iTunes or the Podbean app. Give us a review. It's super important for us. Helps the ratings, helps keep us ahead of everything. It helps us keep this podcast free, to be honest with you. So if you get out there and do that for me, I'd appreciate it. And please go check out Phoenix Shooting Bags. They're our number one sponsor, and they put out an awesome product, and we appreciate them. And I'd appreciate it if you could go check them out. Let's roll into this next episode.
Welcome to Days in the Wild, Big Game Hunting Podcast, brought to you by Phoenix Shooting Bags. And we're back on with Jason Phelps, and we're going to hit him up with a few more of the elk hunting scenarios and pick his brain a little bit on what he would do. What's going on, Jason?
Not much. Just enjoying the nice weather we finally got here in Southwest Washington.
Do you guys actually get nice weather over there?
We do. we've had a bunch of rain the last couple of days, and we've got like 3 days where it's going to jump all the way up to the mid-80s, which is going to be like a heat wave for us, and then right back to torrential downpouring by the time the weekend rolls into the next week. So, yeah, if you don't like the weather in Washington, just hang around for 15 minutes, and it's sure to change.
Oh, man, I swear every time that I go to Washington or Oregon, I have to ask myself why. Because of the upwards. I love it. I love it there. It's beautiful. Absolutely beautiful place. Great place to hunt. But, man, I swear every time I've been there, I spent 21 days hunting. 21 days, I think, hunting elk in Oregon, and an additional 7, I believe, in Washington.
Yeah.
And out of the 28 days that I've hunted there, I think I've had about 4 sunny days.
It's crazy here. And there's even worse spots. Like, there's some spots where, you know, really, really good Roosevelt hunting up around like Forks, but they get 120 inches of rain a year. It's just where I live, we get about 60 to 70 inches of rain a year, which is a lot, but I mean, Forks is almost double.
We got about 13 to 15.
Again, you guys get that all in 2 days, probably just those big downpours, and then it's done.
Pretty much. Yeah, no, I want to say, I think we get 340 days of sun. Something crazy like that.
Yeah, that'd be nice, but then I don't know.
No, it gets depressing too.
So, yeah. Too dang hot to do anything.
Too much of anything sucks. Yeah. Like right now, it's hot. Fuck, man. It got so hot so quick this year, which is kind of nice. And this is the first year that I'm actually happy about it, because coronavirus doesn't like the sun and it doesn't like heat. So yeah, it's going to help the state out a lot with that. But yeah, it's May 7th right now, and it is 107 degrees outside.
Yeah, it's too hot. I don't be getting that.
Oh, it's rotten. I actually had a couple of predator hunting clients that I told them, I'm like, I don't know, man. I think we should probably hold off and have you come in the fall, because it's bad. It's nice in the morning. Like, you wake up in the morning, it's still 60 something degrees, but
yeah, I mean, as long as you're in the house by 8.
Yeah, I was just saying, if you're not, you know, if you're out there at like 9:30, 10 o'clock, it's hot. So, yeah. But anyway, so I'm going to hit you with this, like, the dream hunt scenario where everybody's looking, you know, everybody wishes they had this. Everybody talks about it when they do. But it's actually a pretty frustrating and difficult situation to deal with if you're faced with it. And, you know, it's this, when you drop into this canyon, you hit the jackpot. There's bulls screaming in every direction. And every time you call, they're all answering back. Everything's just fired up. How do you determine which bull to go after and how you're going to get them killed?
Okay. So first question you got to kind of answer for yourself. Are you willing to kill any of these elk, or is there a specific bull in this canyon you don't want to screw up? So it depends on whether you're, you know, in an over-the-counter unit.
Let's answer it both ways.
Okay. So if there's a specific bull you want to kill, and if you can't identify him by his bugle, you know, sometimes we're fortunate enough to get to see a bull bugle and know exactly what he sounds like. You're going to have to figure out which elk is the lowest, or which elk do you have to go around the farthest to get the wind right to even begin. And I'm imagining a 2014 hunt in the Tucannon, southeast corner of Washington, the Blues. You know, at one time it may have been, you know, the best elk hunting, you know, it would have rivaled Arizona and Nevada and Utah, you know, at its best. In 2014, just a canyon going nuts. And you have to make a decision at that point whether you're okay killing any of these bulls, which I think, you know, a lot of your listeners, a lot of any elk hunters, they're okay going to kill any of these bulls. Now, let's say, all right, you've waited 20 years to draw this tag and you believe one of these bulls is your target bull, but let's just say he's in the middle of this group of bugling bulls with satellites all around him. You need to decide that first. If I'm okay killing any of these elk, I'm going to probably just get the wind on the closest one. I'd be willing to scare or push out some of these other elk if the wind eventually gets them. But if, let's say, you know, one of the closer bulls is extremely aggressive, he's bugling, answering me a lot, and I get the wind, you know, I can scoop down, get the wind on him, or scoop up and get the wind on him very, very quickly. That's what I would do. I would be willing to risk or get winded by some of these other elk, knowing that my target elk would think the game was completely on. Always somewhat cautious in the back of my head that, hey, if I do let these other elk wind me and they take off and then the rest of them take off and all these elk can hear it, that it may blow the rest of these out. So you're always going in still a little bit cautious. Like, do I want to do that? But saying this bull's close, he's very aggressive, he won't know what's going on if these other elk wind me, I'm going to go right at him. Now, if you think of this group of elk and this group of bugling bulls as one big, you know, slug, one big herd of elk, and you need to keep the wind on all of them in order to kill a specific bull, that's kind of my approach. So the very first thing is get the wind right. You know, whether in this instance, we all know that when you're down on a cold water creek bottom in a big canyon, the wind's going down almost all day. It's the one spot where that cold water, the cold breeze down in the bottom of the creek, even though the rest of the wind's swirling and going up, that creek's going to go down. You know, in that instance in the Tucannon, we went down, got in the creek, and then started coming back up. Now, what you're going to do, what I'm going to do on this hunt is I'm slowly going to try to start calling these elk in as I approach them or get a visual on them to see if that's our target bull. You know, ideally you can recognize him by his bugle. Let's say we can't, you know, a lot of these elk sound similar, or you can't really identify the bull that you think you're after. You slowly start working up with the wind right. You know, when you're down in, you know, say you're down in this creek bottom, you know, you mentioned, you know, we're in a canyon. As soon as I start to get out of this creek bottom, one thing I think a lot of elk hunters forget is that as soon as I start to get off the bottom of that creek, the wind's going to eventually pick up and go up. So you're in this like swirling transition, and you know, you got to kind of be a mad scientist and figure out, and each one of these finger ridges, each one of these finger draws, as they hit the main creek, like what can we imagine the wind is doing? And then are you comfortable enough? I always assume, and it's a safe assumption, that that wind can go forever in the direction that it's going, you know, before you make your move. So I know we really haven't even got into the strategy of how I'm going to call this bull in yet. I'm putting so much effort into making sure they can't smell me before I ever get close. as we get close, you're always adding information to your pile of information as you're going up. Like, can you pick out what you for sure think is a satellite bull? Are there indications? Can you hear the cows? Does there sound like there's a bull that's with the cows versus some of these other elk that aren't with cows? And a lot of times you can get fooled here because there may be multiple herds or some satellite bulls that are carrying cows that are being talkative. So while it's not always going to be the right answer, you're trying to give yourself as much information as possible. And then there's going to be some assumptions made at your target bull. Like, he's more aggressive. You can tell that he's got a deeper bugle. Some of this stuff is going to come into play and we may just choose wrong. You know, I think we've all been there where we thought we were after the biggest, baddest bull and we call him a satellite or a raghorn and the opposites happen. You know, we've had some satellites or raghorns just sound giant, but you're just trying to make your best guess on what you think the right bull is if you can't identify him. And then you're really just going to start picking your way to him, kind of calling your way to him. If you decided you're not willing to settle on some of these satellite bulls, you know, you can try to call them in and get a visual on them. Or if time is of the essence, if there are some reasons, you know, if it's getting late, if you think the wind's going to switch, you know, if you're at that 9 to 10 o'clock timeline in the morning, or, you know, 4 to 5 o'clock timeline at night, you know, that wind's eventually going to switch on you in that canyon. You know, there's times where we have to hurry things up before everything we did is worth nothing. But yeah, eventually just call these bulls in. And then I'm going to go back to my standard setup. My standard scenario is I get tight on what I think is that herd bull. And the nice thing is, you know, rewind, if there's that many elk in this canyon, a lot of times I can take myself out of that, you know, I don't need to be involved anymore for these elk to keep bugling. If there are multiple elk bugling in a canyon, they a lot of times will keep themselves talking. That big bull will be agitated because he's got satellites around him. And so in an ideal situation, those elk are talking without me ever having to make a peep. So I can move silently. They don't know I exist as I'm coming up this canyon. I will try to drop in within 100 yards of where I think that target bull's at. And I'm just going to, at that point, I will insert myself into the game with good wind and just be the biggest, baddest bull that's now in this party in the canyon. I don't hold anything back. I figure that bull's temperature's already been cranked to 11. And I'm just going to insert myself as a dominant bull that's close enough to his cows to pose a threat. You know, I may do some excited cow calling in there just to kind of continue to paint that picture that, hey, there are also, you know, some of your cows have got away. They're down here by me and I'm here to take them. So that's when I'll go to my biggest, baddest challenge bugles. I'll a lot of times throw grunts in and I'm trying to elicit that fight or flight mentality in that bull now. Like, hey, you no longer have the option to take your cows and run from me. I've gotten close enough. I've got into here undetected because, you know, you didn't know I was here until I just ripped that bugle off right in your face. And a lot of times if we get close enough, like that's my ideal situation is if I can get close to an agitated bull undetected and rip a bugle within 100 yards, a lot of times that bull is going to be in our lap very, very quickly. So I don't know if that was the exact answer. That's kind of my long answer. And so
no, that's good. Very good.
You know, it kind of lets the listeners into my head. And like maybe a lot of guys are like, man, you think about this stuff way too much, but it's just, I'm always trying to gather information instead of just kind of going, you know, balls to the walls into a situation like, you know, pick things off, slowly get in, and then, you know, just pretty much get in his face and rip that bugle.
I like that you said you were going to let them do the talking and you close the distance without making a sound.
Yep.
That definitely, to me, sounds like a really great strategy. The last time I was faced with this, I did not do that, but I shared it with on another podcast. But that's a way to do it. I like that idea. I mean,
it's tough. I mean, because I always joke in a lot of the seminars, like I love nothing more than to make a bugle and get a bugle back. Like there's no better feeling, right, than you get an instant response. But I think if we put killing elk above, you know, the let's just get a response category, even though it's awesome, that it's ultimately going to help. But even then, I said, I've been here hundreds of times and there's always, you know, the little guy on your shoulder saying, you should probably bugle and see where they're at. And it always seems like a great idea, but I think ultimately it's hurting your chances at killing that elk.
For sure. for sure. I'm definitely one of those guys. I find myself talking myself out of having to relocate them, you know, just, you know, they're over there. Just keep going, move slow. Eventually he's going to pipe off again. You don't need to open your mouth. Yeah.
And I mean, a lot of people, I don't know if they forget or they just, I mean, elk are stinky, stinky critters, right? Like they stink. And if you did your job and at least got the wind somewhat right, you know, if it's a 10 degrees towards your nose, like if you did this right, you should be able to start to smell these things as you get within, you know, 150 to 200 yards a lot of times.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
I've used my nose for a number of different critters before. My friends joke at me all the time. They call me a bloodhound. I've killed elk because of matter of fact, I think my first two cows were because I winded them and moved into position, and I killed my first javelina here in Arizona that way too. My big Italian schnoz picks up scent pretty good. I mean, I think you answered that real well and covered both scenarios, whether you're looking for the biggest, baddest or happy with anything. Yeah. So my next scenario, you have a bull who's been answering you all morning long and he basically lets you get into a couple hundred yards, sometimes even 150 yards, maybe even closer. But then as soon as you get into that zone, he rounds up his cows and he moves over another couple hundred yards away from you. And he just keeps doing this to you.
Yep.
But he's happy to keep answering you. He just, as soon as you get in close, he takes his cows and goes. What are you doing in this scenario?
Yeah, so this is the old cat and mouse game. This is how that exact scenario is how I probably spent the first 5 years of my archery elk hunting career. Is this doesn't make any sense. I can't make any ground up on these elk. They always stay far enough ahead of me, and I can literally just chase these things in circles for days and days and never make any ground. Now, I still get stuck in this. We still do it routinely, but I've wrote a few articles on what I think more so than what you do right, some of the things that archery elk hunters do absolutely wrong. And this is my number one kind of what elk hunters do wrong when they're trying to call elk in. And I fall victim to it every year because, once again, we like to get a response. We like to know that we're approaching the right direction. We like all of these things. So you locate a bull from 500-600 yards away, long distance locating. You get to where you need to drop in on them or drop up to them or climb to them. And once again, we're unsure. And so you try to relocate that bull and maybe he's in the same spot, but then you get 100 yards closer and you're like, well, I'm really not sure. Bugle. And then that's when, your next bugle, he's going to be the same distance away, kind of going away from you. And you're like, well, what in the heck's going on? Like these elk were content. These elk at that time, maybe it's late enough in the morning. They were content on being down in that timber. They were content being on that bench. And we basically go in there and for lack of a better term, we basically chase them out of their spot they wanted to be. So that's, in my opinion, the biggest mistake we can make is archery elk hunters. Number one, I recommend no matter what mapping software you use, we use Basemap. A lot of people use Onyx. You get that out and you look at where you think that elk is bugling from at that exact time. You make a mark. And my recommendation is, if possible, don't make another peep until, that program says you're within 100 to 150 yards, or you're within 150 yards of that bench. Like, be silent on all of that in between ground. Don't make a peep. That's the number one, most ideal way to kind of handle that is don't call your way all the way in, use your mapping. Now the long answer is, we're gonna use a scenario and try to lay out why these elk are doing what they're doing. So for everybody, I'm going to assume that everybody kind of knows the pecking order. Mid-August, these raghorns will start to join up. They'll break off from the bouncer groups of bulls, and these smaller raghorns kind of think they're running the show, right? And I think the big bulls are just smart enough to know, all right, these raghorns are going to go round up these herds, break these cows apart, and then the big dogs come and take them. you know, late August, early September. They're coming to run the show. They're going to do all the breeding. That bull, I mean, they've got a pretty good idea. You got to figure most of these bulls hang out, you know, in a certain area together. They know what the pecking order is, but they don't necessarily know what the pecking order is when an unannounced bull shows up bugling in their area, you know, even though it's us as the hunter. Mm-hmm. So this elk, you know, he's there to do a few things. He's there to live, he's there to breed, and he's there to, you know, he's willing to fight for those two things. So we always use the analogy of you know, you and your wife are sitting in the back of a restaurant. Some big bully barges in the front door of the restaurant and yells at you from across the restaurant. Hey, so-and-so, I'm here to kick your butt. Well, I'm no dummy. Like, I don't know, you know, even if I think I can take him or not, like, hey, I'm just going to take my wife and walk out the back door, right, and avoid any issues. That's the easy approach. And that's kind of what these elk are doing. The contrary is, and what we're trying to do as elk hunters, if that guy didn't make a peep, you know, he walks in the restaurant, we think nothing of him. He walks in silently, comes down our aisle, we don't know what's going on, and he pounds his fist into my table edge and doesn't let me or my wife get out of the seat. Like, what am I left with now? It, you know, my flight mechanism has been taken away from me, right? I've now got,
right.
I've got a right cross, you know, or whatever it might be at that time, you mm-hmm. know, where I can tell the guy. And so that's what, you know, it's pretty simplified. You know, we're talking about people and elk, but that's kind of what I equate that situation to is, don't give them the ability to run away from you, because that bull is no dummy. Those cows are his for sure thing. That's his for sure breeding ground. You know, that's his chance to score and do what he feels like he's meant to do. But if we wait and basically hit him in the mouth and give him no other option, get as close as you can, you know, challenge Beagle at him, and then go with that.
Cool. Sorry, my dogs are going off like crazy.
No worries.
That's a really good analogy. And it makes perfect sense. You know, you're kind of forcing them to make a decision. Either he's going to tear out of there by himself, we'll leave his cows and say peace, or he's got to come and fight you if he wants to keep them.
Yeah, his number one choice is to take his cows and avoid confrontation. You know, his number two choice is to fight and win, and his absolute worst choice is to leave without those cows. You know, so that's kind of that hierarchy of that bull's decisions. You know, he's always going to keep his cows, or I think almost all bulls running a herd are at least willing to fight for him. You know, he may break off of his cows, and if this was real elk, and you know, if that bull was the biggest, baddest bull in the woods, he's probably just going to walk away defeated. You know, he's not even going to fight. You know, for too long, and then we're going to hopefully be that bull that, you know, that he's coming to fight, and then we're just going to shoot him, and you know, we win in that situation. So I think, you know, he's typically never going to leave his cows just willingly, you know, unless he smells us or something, and it's basically a jailbreak, and he's also just trying to live.
Right. No, makes perfect sense. So my next scenario here. And I'm trying to paint the picture. So you're up top of a ridge and it's early in the morning and you can hear cows feeding below you. And you're pretty sure there's a bull with them, but you're not 100% sure. It's fairly thick, so you can't really glass them up. And he hasn't made a peep yet this morning, but you're fairly certain that there's a bull there. What are you doing to verify that there is a bull there? And when you do, how you get him killed?
Okay. Yeah. So you had mentioned verify until that time. I'm always assuming that there is a bull there in September. Any amount of cows. Now I've been proven wrong a lot of times, but I think we're definitely batting over, you know, 98%. Typically where there's cows, there's a bull either, if not with them, very, very close to them. So that's my number one, you know, number one answer is to always assume there is a bull there. Now to verify that there's a bull there, you know, you said they were down below me. You know, once again, wind always comes into play. Like if it's early in the morning, like I'm going to definitely make sure I do not get over top of them. And if there are elk there, like I'm going to do everything in my power to make sure that they do not win me, more so than me verify that. So I'm always being very, very cautious. you know, if they're below me and down the creek, like I might even drop over my ridge on the backside away from the oak just until this wind switches enough that I'm confident that I can now approach them. You know, a lot of people, I think, get too caught up in the moment and they do something that's way too risky, whether the wind's going down and then if it just slowly starts to angle and gets to them, like there's no good approach right there. And so I'd rather not risk that. Now, as far as verifying that there's a bull there, you know, I may throw out a real, real low intensity location bugle, whether it's a high note or kind of just a real, you know, hey, I'm over here, are you over there, sort of a bugle, and see if I can get his response. Because, you know, with them being below me, unless there's some way I can wrap around the ridge above me, get far enough down in front of them or above them, whichever way they're going, and get the wind perfectly right, like I'm not willing to risk that to get close to visually verify. I know there's, you know, there's trees in our way, we can't glass them. So the only two ways we're going to be able to verify that is to get them to pipe off and let us know that there's a bugle down there, or number two is to get close enough to them to visually see them. You know, and a lot of times I wouldn't do this because I know kind of the layout of the land, whether there's meadows or openings. If I know that they're in an area where, like, hey, they may feed through this meadow or they may feed through this avalanche slide, something where I can see, like I may run and get to that point so I don't even have to make a peep. Like if the wind's going to be good enough, if things are going to be good enough, like, and I know the area I'm hunting and I can visually see, I may try to make that play so I can look at them, see what's going on. If that's not the case and I can't locate them, I'm really going to have to wait until that wind switches in order for me to make my play. So I'm going to just sit back, let the wind, you know, assuming that they're down below me, like you had mentioned, it's first thing in the morning. You know, we've probably got a couple hours in the mountains before that wind is going to switch. So you're just going to have to, and like I said, I'm not very patient, but you're going to have to be patient in this situation. Continue to listen, you know, maybe he'll eventually make a peep on his own, you know, continue to throw some occasional location bugles out there to see if we can get him to answer, but it's going to be patience. And then I'm going to go back to, even if I didn't hear him, I'm going to assume that there's a bull, you know, in that herd, and I'm eventually going to hunt them like I know there's a bull in that herd. You know, get the wind right, make a guess on where I think they're going to feed to, and then go hunt them like that.
Cool. To add to that, one of the things that I've done in the past that I think works fairly well if you're trying not to tip your hat that you're closer to them is that I've muffled my bugle tube, you know, put it up against my buddy's back or into my thigh or whatever, and done a location bugle like that. So I sound like I'm much further away.
Yep.
Giving him the comfort maybe that, oh, I can, that guy's far enough away, I can pipe off, you know. Yeah. And I think a lot of times that's worked in my favor. And then, you know, kind of tackle it like you are, you know.
Yeah, and that's why, in that sense, I mean, just, you know, there's cows there. There's no need to rip off a big locate. It's a real lazy, lackadaisical bugle that just trying to elicit a response, like you said, whether you're farther away, whether you're being lazy, you know, whether you turn the bugle tube 180 degrees away from where you think the elk are at. You know, some of those, what would I call them, like least intrusive bugles, you know, don't really try to rile them up. Just, you're just looking to get that response is what I would go with.
Yeah.
Potentially even maybe cow call ahead of that bugle just to see if he answers that, or potentially the cows answer back to you. There have been instances where if I can get that cow to come in, that bull's going to come in tow as well. And there have been times where we've called in, you know, herds of cows that are, they're just social creatures by nature. You know, they want to come see other elk. And so, you know, there is a potential that you could start that conversation with them and it works out.
Awesome. So I got one other scenario for you. And I'm sure guys have been faced with this before. You're closing the distance on a bull and you get to a spot that you're basically kind of run at. It gets pretty open at this point. This happens a lot here in Arizona in the Ponderosa. We, you know, you could see for a long ways, even in the timber. Get to a spot and you spot the bull, you spot his cows, and you're like 120 yards off. But you know, if you really try to sneak in any closer, you're probably gonna get busted.
Yeah.
You know, let's say he's got 10 cows with him. They're all feeding, and he's just kind of running around between them all, checking them, doing his bull thing. What are you doing in that scenario? Are you trying to back up to the thicker cover to try to get him to call in, or are you going to try to call right from there, or what are you doing?
Is this day one of a 10-day hunt or day 10 of a 10-day hunt? it really depends on that. Like, how early in the hunt is it?
You're halfway between.
How bad do I want to kill this bull versus any other bull in the unit? Like, is he something special? Okay. Do I want to leave him? You know, so some of this stuff will come into play on that. How much time in the day do I have left? Like, is there a potential for him to feed to it? You know, is this herd going to move away from this 120-yard wide open setup or scenario, or am I running out of time on the last day? You know, so a lot of this, like I said, I don't mean to dodge the question.
Okay.
But if I know that there's 3 hours left in the day and he may move, I'm going to practice as much patience as I have and let him basically try to move off so that I can cover that distance. The situation, as you painted it, is one of the worst situations ever for archery elk hunting, because we all know that bull is going to get to the edge of the opening. The way that real elk are supposed to work, he beagles, the cow or bull that's beagling at him comes and shows himself. Either the cow runs to him or the bull, you know, shows itself, and he decides whether they're going to posture and go at it or whether they're going to just go separate ways, you know. And so we're trying to basically reverse nature by tucking in behind a tree or alongside of a tree and never showing ourselves and, you know, staying hidden from that elk. So that's kind of that scenario that we painted. If it's early in the morning, I'm almost guaranteeing that those elk are going to move away and I'll get a better setup. Like, maybe not even, you know, maybe not even call. You had mentioned we had spotted these things. Maybe we haven't called up until now. Like, they don't need to know that I exist until I'm ready for them to know that. You know, let them go off, let them do their thing, and then, you know, close the distance later. If it's at night, you know, and they may feed out into the opening, like, maybe it's worth just hanging out and seeing if they feed my way. You know, some of that stuff. Now, if they're going to move, I'm going to quickly close that 120 yards and try to keep them as close as possible as long as I don't risk bumping them. And then we're going to go right back to kind of our traditional setup. Now, I will kind of weigh in, like, well, how active was that bull since I just got to watch him for a little bit across the way? Like, is he dealing with satellites? Is he just feeding alongside of his cows? Because I'm going to kind of want to match that bull's temperament as I move in and try to call him in.
Well, you know what? I'm going to give you a very specific scenario that I was faced with. This is 2013. Would have been the biggest bull I ever killed in my life. So I really wanted to kill him. He was pushing 400. This is here in Arizona. He had two satellite bulls that were probably – one was like 340. It was a great bull. Yep. And another one that was right around that 310 mark. And then two spikes. And there was about 15 cows. And we were hunting – I was hunting the metro unit here in Arizona. It's 11M, and it's they've done a lot of brush clearing in this unit because there's a lot of homes. So yeah, the understory under the Ponderosa is pretty damn wide open. You know, you can see if you're using binos, you can glass, you know, 200 yards.
Yep.
You know, so when you are moving in on these elk, you're going tree to tree. You're being very, you know, like you're stalking a mule deer, you know, type scenario. But we get in. It was myself, it was my cameraman, and I had my two it was actually the outfitter I used to work for, him and one of the other guides with me. And you know, we set up. I was able to get 60 yards ahead of them. I was able to crawl and sneak to about, I want to say it was like 80 or 85 yards. And this bull was, and the reason why I was able to, the cows were really just, they were feeding. They weren't picking their heads up at all. But the bull was so concerned with these other two bulls and just kept, you know, he was chasing them back and forth all over the freaking place. They kept coming in. Every time he chased one, the other one would kind of slip in and try to, you know, grab a cow.
Yeah.
excuse me. So he was pretty occupied, so that's why I was able to get away with as much as I did. But I got to a point that that was it. I was done. I wasn't getting any closer because it got pretty – I mean, there were still trees, but it was pretty sparse. You know, the trees were 50 yards apart, you know, 40 yards apart type scenario, and it was pretty just grass, you know, and that's why they were in there feeding. But – and the two spikes were sparring with each other. They had no clue what the fuck was going on. Yeah. They two dum-dums didn't know what was going on. But – so I had guys behind me and they were calling, you know, cow calling and stuff at first. And then we kind of switched, they switched to, you know, challenging type calls and letting them know that there was another bull there and maybe there was another cow. So one of them was doing cow calls. The other one was kind of like talking to the cow and then challenging him and like, but you know, it didn't work out for us. So I didn't end up getting that bull. So, what I'd like to hear what you would have done,
man. It's tough. Like,
yeah, I know you. It's you got to read them, but it's.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if sometimes you can see those big herd bulls will chase a satellite off 100, 150 yards. Like, I'm wondering, like, was there any opportunity there? Like, if he was to chase those satellites way off, could you have like did some out of the box stuff and like tried to make up a bunch of ground and got yourself close to his cows without them seeing you? But if I'm just assuming that they can see you as well, and you would basically just spook his dang, you know, cows. Now, if we fast forward this and it's the very last night of the last day, like I may go spook his cows on purpose. And then when he comes back after chasing that satellite bull off, I start making some cow calls. Like that could potentially work, but we're getting really, really out of the box here and stuff that has a very, very low probability of, you know, potentially working out. That's, it's just tough. Like if there's that many eyes and that many elk, you know, looking at you and that much going on, like it's going to be very, very tough to close that distance without, you know, a cow picking you off, or, you know, you're most likely that bull is so, you know, tied up with the legit satellite bulls that he can see, like you inserting yourself as a satellite bull isn't going to work great because, you know, he's not even worried about you because he can't see you. He can see all these other elk. You know, it's that is, you know, mission impossible there. There's not a good answer, you know, besides letting them feed to somewhere that's brushy, you know, feed down into a ravine or a draw, you know, some of that stuff.
Yeah.
Unfortunately,
I just kind of sat there and I was hoping that it would play out and they eventually all fed off. And then I got into the scenario where they were just kept going ahead of us, to go to where they wanted to go bed. And for whatever reason, I lost them.
Yeah.
And I never got on that bull again. I tried like hell for a few days. And then I ended up shooting like a 350 bull a couple nights later. Yeah. But, you know, obviously would have much rather had a 400. Yeah. But
Yeah. Yeah, those are those tough situations where sometimes, like, well, I'm glad that I at least like watching creatures like this, because that might have been one of those nights where you just kind of, you see, I mean, you still want to kill him, but just like this sit down in awe of, you know, watching a really awesome bull do his thing. Yeah. You know, similar on the Oregon hunt this year, like there was one night that I didn't even really hunt. I just was in awe of, you know, a mid 380s bull and just watched them all night, and it was cool, you know, but. I kind of wrote off like I have no chances of ever killing this bull because he's out in the wide open and it's going to be what it's going to be. And I don't want to scare him because I have a couple of days left of the hunt.
Gotcha. So the big takeaway from that whole scenario is try to be patient and read the situation, I guess.
Yeah. That's the best I can do with that.
Well, sweet. Well, awesome, man. That's all I got for you.
Yeah.
Where can our listeners find out more about you? And
we're pretty available on all social media platforms, Instagram at Phelps Game Calls, on Facebook, the Phelps Game Calls page. You can get a hold of me personally. And then we also have our website, www.phelpsgamecalls.com. So we try to be as available as anybody out there. You know, if you need to get a hold of us, there should be a way that fits your fancy.
Perfect. Well, thanks again for coming on and sharing your knowledge with us, and good luck to you this season.
Yeah.
Hopefully, maybe one of these days when I'm in the Northwest, I'll get a chance to actually hunt with you.
Yeah. Get a hold of us, and good luck this year, John, and good luck to all the listeners, and thanks for having me on.
All right, bud. Take it easy.
Take care.